humor, wisdom, and spiritualism, no pressure, right?
And baseball.
And baseball, right. For those of you who missed my baseball talk, I know so much about baseball that I didn't need any notes. Today, however, I'm teaching myself as much as I'm teaching you, so I brought a few. Some of you may have heard of the rules for being human. They circulated on the internet for years. They were published in Chicken Soup for the Soul. And the actual author, Sherry Scott, Carter Scott, wrote a book called If Life is a Game, These Are the Rules. And I would just like to read the rules and then move on to my real speech. Number one, you will receive a body. Number two, you will learn lessons. Number three, there are no mistakes, only lessons. Number four, lessons are repeated until learned. Number five, learning lessons does not end. Number six, there is no better than here. Number seven, others are merely mirrors of you. Number eight, what you make of your life is up to you. Number nine, your answers lie inside you. And number 10, you will forget all this. The rules for being human. I'd like to expand a little on rule number 8. What you make of your life is up to you. You have all the tools and resources you need. What you do with them is up to you. The choice is yours. As a result of taking that number 8 rule for being human and expanding it a little, I wanted to talk to us tonight, because I talk to myself as much as I do to you, about the tools for being human. Each of us has a toolbox, and we may not even be aware of our toolbox, but it's important to learn what your tools are and how to use them properly. It was said by a wise person that if a man only has a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If you only have a hammer in your toolbox, you will treat the beautiful blossom that you want to take into your house and put in the vase the same way that you would treat a nail. You will hammer it, crushing its beauty, rather than snipping it off and saving it to enjoy. So what are the tools that we can find in our toolbox? I can only tell you about the tools that are in my toolbox, but some of these may be yours. You may have others that are even more valuable to you. So let me tell you what I think are the tools for being human. Number one, coincidentally, there are 10 of these also. Number one, self-awareness. To me, it is so important that I get to know my toolbox, that I discover my skills and talents, that I learn what things work for me and what things don't, that I appreciate the positive things about myself and that I understand the less than positive things about myself. Now, there are lots of ways to become self-aware. One is a simple astrology. Many of us have read of our sun signs and found some amusing and interesting features there that may or may not describe us. But we can learn that people who share that sun sign are a certain way, and we can examine ourselves and say, are we also that way or not? It's a starting point. A similar starting point is a test called the Myers-Briggs test. It gives 16 different possible combinations of psychological bents, and each one of those 16 is slightly different. The Myers-Briggs is often used in business settings because certain types of Myers-Briggs personalities blend better with other types than do some of the rest. So bosses may want to know, you know, what's your Myers-Briggs? So they can say, well, I want these ISTJ people, but I don't want these ENFPs or whatever the case may be. So you can find the Myers-Briggs probably on the internet and take the test and discover which combination of 4 different letters you are, and what are the characteristics of that individual or individuals with those combinations of letters, and determine, is that you or not? And if it is you, what can you learn from the characteristics that are common to people of that letter combination? And if not, why did you answer the questions that way on the test? A third way that I particularly enjoy to find out about yourself is called the Enneagram. The Enneagram is a set of 9 different personality types. This test is considerably more rigorous than the Myers-Briggs test. It's like 150 questions. And they're not yes or no, they're which one would you rather do? Would you rather have a dinner party or go to a ball game? Well, that's a difficult choice for me. As much as you know I love baseball, I also love dinner parties. But you have to weight your answer and choose one. You can't just say it's a toss-up. In the Enneagram test, I learned that I am a number 9 of the 9. Of course, 9 is the best. Seriously, all the numbers are created equal. There are difficulties and positive qualities associated with each of the numbers. But the 9 really nailed me on the head, if you want me to use my hammer analogy, because 9s are motivated by sloth. Sloth meaning inactivity, laziness, inertia, path of least resistance, and sometimes dissociation in the face of confrontation. That's me. And when I read the description of the 9 in the Enneagram book, I thought, oh my goodness, no one knows this about me. And even my best friend did not know that I was a 9. She was shocked when I told her what I discovered about my Enneagram number. So the point being, if you don't know who you are, you cannot know what your toolbox looks like. You cannot know what tools you have inside it, and you cannot know how to use them appropriately. So pick a venue, a methodology, a mechanism for discovering who you are. Do a values assessment for yourself. Find out what's important to you. What are your values? What do you love? What do you hate? What's important to you? And once you've done all these things, you will have an idea of what your toolbox looks like, but you may still be unaware of the tools that are in it. And these are some of my tools. Number 2, humor. Laugh a lot, especially at yourself. When I learned to ski, it was the most difficult and challenging thing I've ever done in my life. I literally flunked out of ski school at Aspen Buttermilk and was told by the instructor to ride down the mountain on the lift. Do you know how mortifying it is to ride down the mountain on the lift? Nobody does that except people who flunked ski school. The next day, I went to remedial ski school, and I was there with people who had physical and mental disabilities. Now, I could have chosen, seriously, I could have chosen to be absolutely devastated and never go skiing again. But instead, I chose to laugh at my inability to master the mountain, and I managed to survive the second day of ski school, even when I had to get on the lift with somebody who dragged me down the only time I possibly was going to stand up getting off the lift. I fell, he skied away, but he had pulled me in order to survive himself. I laughed, and the next time I went skiing, and I stood at the top of an intermediate hill that my friends mistakenly thought I was qualified to ski down, I was paralyzed with terror. And I cried and cried and could not move off the top of this precipice until I realized that one way or another, I had to get to the bottom of the mountain. And I'd already ridden down the lift once, and I didn't like that, by golly. So instead of continuing to cry, I started to laugh. And I discovered that you can slide quite away on the back of your jacket if you just ski as far as you can. Ski as far as you can and then fall as far as you can. Works wonderfully. So laugh a lot, especially at yourself. But you can laugh with people too, and it brings you closer. Victor Borges said, laughter is the shortest distance between two people. He was right. Shared laughter is a gift to not only the planet, but to the individuals who share it. So laugh a lot. Number three, integrity. Integrity means a lot of different things. I choose to define it as tell the truth and keep your word. And if we tell the truth, it's important for us to be self-aware so that we know what our truth really is. Harking back to number one, what is my truth? I once had a regular occurrence, let's say. I was trying to think of some other word besides dose. I used to have a regular occurrence of Jehovah's Witnesses visiting my house. And they wanted to, you know, give me the newspaper and tell me their view of the world, and especially of religion. And once I joined this church, I really came to discover what my truth about God and spirituality is. And the next time a Jehovah's Witness couple came to my door, I invited them in. And we sat in my living room for about 2 hours and shared our truths. What religion means to me, what religion means to them. What God is to them, what God is to me. What the Bible is to me, what the Bible is to them. And I was able, from my new knowledge of my own truth, to state my position, to listen to their position and not feel threatened by it. And we had a wonderful communication for, like I said, about 2 hours. That was over 9 years ago, and I have not had a Jehovah's Witness visiting my door since. The point being, if we know what our own integrity means, then we can operate from that, and it will move us beyond external threats. Keeping our word is also vitally important because other people depend on us. Barbara and Ken are two examples of people who keep their word beyond imagination, because every time Millie leaves, and even when she's not gone, Barbara and Ken manage to run this place and keep the spirit alive. And it's a tribute to their integrity that they're here every week, or in Ken's case, every week when Millie's not here. And that they do what they say they will do. If we could all be as committed, we would benefit from it. Oprah Winfrey said, real integrity is doing the right thing, knowing that nobody's going to know whether you did it or not. Integrity isn't about what anybody else thinks of us. Integrity is about looking in the mirror and recognizing who we are and what our truth is and living by that. Number four, generosity. Millie teaches us every week in class and almost every week here at the forum to cheer for someone else. What is that except generosity? If we can reach out and cheer for the happiness, for the joy, for the experience of someone else, how much greater will our lives be? I have a friend whose Enneagram number is 4, and Enneagram 4s are motivated by envy. And she is always buying a ticket to a concert and then beating herself up because she's not up there playing the piano, being envious of the person who is performing so much that she can't enjoy the performance. I have no piano skills. I sit there and love the fact that this other person is doing a beautiful job. Who's having a better time at the concert? That's right, I am. If we can be generous enough to want other people to succeed, then we will succeed because we are giving away that which we most want to receive, and it comes back, as we know, heaped up and running over in our area of need. Generosity is a gift to the giver more than it is a gift to the receiver. So generosity is a wonderful tool to have in your toolbox. Number five, gratitude. Someone named Terry Lynn Taylor said, gratitude is our most direct line to God and the angels. The more we seek gratitude, the more reasons the angels will give us for gratitude and joy to exist in our lives. Talk about a reason to be grateful. The more we're grateful, the more we have to be grateful for. How easy is that? So Sarah Van Breathnach, in her book Civil Abundance, talked about a gratitude journal. And I practiced this for a couple of years before everything caught up with me. And she says, at the end of every day, write down 5 things you're grateful for from that day. And some days it might be, I'm grateful that I won the lottery, and I'm grateful that I met the man of my dreams, and, you know, I'm grateful that I bought a new car and it was free. But other days it might be just, I'm grateful that I was able to wake up this morning, or I'm grateful that I have a roof over my head, or I'm grateful that I had lunch. It doesn't matter what we're grateful for. Gratitude is a muscle, and the more we exercise it, the stronger it gets. And the more our gratitude muscle gains in strength, the more we have to be grateful for. Gratitude is a great tool to have in your toolbox. Number 6, enthusiasm. Last week I promised that I would be giving Ken's talk part 2. And in case you missed Ken's talk, he gave a wonderful description of how attitude is a determining factor in your life. Attitude is a tool in Ken's toolbox, and it could be a tool in each of ours if we were to choose to use it that way. Enthusiasm is a variant of attitude, and enthusiasm just means amp up your attitude. Samuel Ullman said, years may wrinkle the skin, but to give up enthusiasm wrinkles the soul. The story I love about enthusiasm is two little boys who were told to go out to the barn and find their gift. And they arrived to find a mountain of horse manure. And the one little boy said, oh, horse manure, what a great gift. And cried because he was disappointed. And the second little boy said, if there's that much horse manure, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere. And started digging. Enthusiasm can change the glass from half empty to half full without changing the level of the water. Enthusiasm in and of itself can change our lives. Be enthusiastic. Annie Mame, one of my favorite characters in literary history, said, life's a banquet and most poor suckers are starving to death. Enthusiasm seats us at the table, puts a fork in our hand, and stuffs food in our mouth. Be enthusiastic. Number 7, discernment. Know that you know. Miller teaches that discernment is one of the greatest gifts that we can give ourselves, because we have a lot of information at our fingertips these days with Google and the internet. But is it really data, or is it information? Data meaning just facts, and information meaning something meaningful. Meaningful facts. Do we know what's true and what's only data? Do we know what's important? Do we know rather than just believe in something? You can use your intelligence and your judgment. The important thing about judgment, which is a feature of discernment, is that like any tool in your toolbox, you have to use it in the manner in which it was intended, because you want to use judgment like a scalpel rather than like a chainsaw. So determine the truth in the world outside of yourself. Discernment is really identifying truth outside of yourself, where integrity is and self-awareness determine the truth inside of yourself. Number 8, compassion. Be caring. Care for others and care for yourself. Merriam-Webster defines compassion as sympathetic consciousness of others' distress together with a desire to alleviate it. I remember back in the mid-80s, I was taking a personal development workshop called Creative Personal Interaction. And I might have told this story before, but one of our assignments in Creative Personal Interactions was to go out into the world for a 3-hour lunch period and have 3 creative personal interactions. Now, they didn't tell us what a creative personal interaction was, so we each got to make our own definition. But the most meaningful moment of that entire 3 hours for me was when I went into the restroom, and there was a young girl in there, probably between 8 and 10, being verbally abused by her mother. And As her mother left the restroom, I was going into the stall and the little girl looked at me and I looked at her and she sort of smiled and I sort of smiled back. And I knew in that moment that I had compassion for her. I cared about her situation and I had a desire to alleviate it. There was nothing I could do except smile. But smile I did. And the point that I learned from that was that creative personal interactions can be as brief as 15 seconds. They don't have to be sharing a life to be important. And it's when we care from our hearts that we can touch others in their hearts, that we can bring that caring to the front. Compassion is a wonderful gift to the person who carries it in their toolbox, because it can make a difference in other people's lives. Knowing that someone cares can make a difference in other people's lives. Number nine, as powerful, forgiveness. Forgive, especially yourself. How many times do we blame ourselves for things that have gone wrong in our lives? It's even easier to blame yourself than it is to blame others, I've discovered. Others tend to leave, or you know, we forget them or whatever, but we're always with us. So try to forgive yourself first. Sherry Carter Scott, in this very book, If Love is the Game, These Are the Rules, said, anger makes you smaller while forgiveness forces you to grow beyond what you were. You know, we were created perfect in God's eyes. We will never be anything less than perfect in God's eyes. God don't make no junk. So forgive yourself and move on. If there's something that you are beating yourself up over, get over it. Easier said than done, but forgiveness is a great tool. Find out if it's in your toolbox and how to use it and apply it to yourself. Number 10, prayer. Pray consciously and abundantly. Every week we come here, we get to pray. And every week we come here, Millie or Ken or whoever is running the show up here reminds us that we're always, always, always talking to God. Because God hears everything. God hears our thoughts, our words, and sees our actions. Pray consciously. Be aware. Beyond the oh God curse, you know. If we can be aware of our prayers and pray constantly and consciously, how much better a place will the world be? One of my favorite self-help books is a book called The Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And in that book, the author describes a scenario where a man was waiting at the airport in between flights. He had like a 3-hour layover. And he had no place to sit, but he was standing, leaning up against the wall in one of the hallways. And his operation of choice was, since he was waiting there anyway, didn't want to read a book, didn't want to read a newspaper, didn't want to sleep, he decided that he would just stand there leaning up against the wall and pray consciously for everybody to walk by him. So he did. And he hadn't been doing it more than about an hour when somebody came up to him and he said, "Sir, I don't know what you're doing, but it's a very good thing." People aren't even aware of the power of prayer. We pretend we are. We say, oh yes, prayer works, and we pray. But we're not even aware of the magnitude of the power of prayer. Pray consciously and abundantly. That's 10. I promised you 10. Well, darn, there's another one here. Patience. The reason that patience is on the list is because I think it would be a nice tool to have. The reason it's not in the top 10 is because I don't have it, okay? I worship at the church of what's happening now. And the prayer there is, God, give me patience and give it to me now. But patience is a very, very valuable commodity, if you think about it. I don't know how many of you have heard the story that goes along with the Stephen Covey material on what matters most. The story of if you put big rocks in a jar, then you say the jar is full. But you can always fit some more small rocks in around the big rocks and say the jar is full. But you can always fit some gravel in around the small rocks and say the jar is full. But you can always add some water to the gravel and the big rocks and the little rocks, and the jar might actually be full. Now the story also goes on to say, and then you can also add a couple of beers and the jar will be full. But the moral of that story is, everything benefits from a couple of beers. Okay. Meanwhile, back at patience, okay. Patience is the water. Patience fits in around all the big rocks and all the little rocks and all the gravel and all the sand and makes it the life really full, because patience allows breathe, it allows us to forgive ourselves, it allows us to remember what our truth is so we can walk in integrity, it allows us to pray. Patience makes all those other 10 things work. So it's a real nice tool to have in your toolbox. I'm working on it. Now, if everybody has a hammer and everything looks like a nail, then we all go around bashing each other. But if we have forgiveness and integrity and patience and prayer, generosity and gratitude, and all of these tools in our toolbox, in any given moment, we can stop and say, which tool would be the best one to use here? If someone is screaming at you on the highway, instead of using your hammer, what if you chose prayer and prayed for them, even though they are cursing you? Life would be easier. We all have large toolboxes. We all have lots of tools. My 10 may not be your 10. You can think of your own toolboxes and your own tools and figure out which are the important ones. But each one of us has tool after tool after tool. And these are the tools for being human. Tools that can give us better lives, that can make us happier, healthier, and holier. Now, many of you know I like acronyms. Self-awareness, humor, integrity, gratitude, generosity, enthusiasm, I forgot what D was, discernment, compassion. See, I can't even remember my own. Forgiveness, prayer, and patience is an acronym that spells SAHIGDF. Oh well, it was a nice try. I'd like to close with some of Audrey Hepburn's tools. They are actually called beauty tips in this book that I found them in. Beauty tips from Audrey Hepburn. Now that's something worth knowing, because Audrey Hepburn was one of the most beautiful women on the planet. She had elegance, she had grace, she had style. And these are Audrey Hepburn's beauty tips. For attractive lips, speak words of kindness. For lovely eyes, seek out the good in people. For a slim figure, share your food with the hungry. For beautiful hair, let a child run his fingers through it once a day. And for poise, walk with the knowledge that you will never walk alone. Check out your toolboxes. Share your tools with the world. And thank you for giving me this time.
You are the most beautiful soul.
Good stuff.